With each episode, we're pulling back the curtain on what it really means to build a media career, break barriers, and stay true to your voice. Welcome to this special edition of Her Media Diary podcast, coming to you live from the African Women in Media 2025 conference here in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. I'm your host, Dr. Yemisi Akinbobola, and with each episode, we're pulling back the curtain on what it really means to build a media career, break barriers, and stay true to your voice. So whether you're starting out or you're already on the journey, this space is definitely for you. So today's theme is investing in local media and journalism, focusing particularly on MacArthur Foundation's On Nigeria program. To explore this topic, I'm joined by three incredible women whose work span policy, community accountability, impact, and local journalism. Right next to me is Fatima Mohammed Ahmed, who is the chairperson of the Nigeria Association of Women Journalists in Yobe State. Welcome, Fatima.
Thank you.
Next is Dr. Adaobi Obiabumo. I think I got that right this time, yes? The program manager and a founding member of the Progressive Impact Organization for Community Development, also called PRIMOG. So PRIMOG is a non-profit civil society organization promoting popular participation, inclusiveness, and good governance. And at the far end is Oluwadara Ajala, the program manager of Media Development Investment Fund, MDIF, in charge of West and East Africa.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. Ladies, I'm super thrilled to have you here. So to our audience, thank you for joining us and for what promises to be honest, insightful, and impactful solution-driven conversation. Mm-hmm. So ladies, I'm going to start with an icebreaker, a general question for all of you. Okay, so if you think about your responses in a few seconds, okay, in one sentence, what does local journalism, or rather, why does local journalism matter to you personally? Shall we start with Fatima?
Yes, local journalism matters to everybody because it is the direct link between the media and the people at the grassroots. Because we need to empower and strengthen the local media in our institution, in our states, because they are the people that deal directly with the community. They are the people that knows the language. They are the people that knows the risks, and they are the people that can write the story accurately and with dignity. They can write the story better, and they can, at the level of which they can understand what the community is feeling.
Yeah, I think that localized community knowledge is absolutely very important. And how about you, Adelby?
Okay, so the media is constitutionally empowered to hold government accountable to the people, specifically Section 22 of the 1999 Constitution as amended, that's in Nigeria. So imagine a situation where corruption thrives. It deprives citizens of development. Corruption widens the inequality gap. The media is there to be the voice of reason. The media is there to be the beacon of hope to the masses. When impunity is allowed to thrive for long, it confers immunity on the perpetrators. So the media, local journalism, journalists at the grassroots, they are there to hold the duty bearers and elected representatives accountable to the people. And another scenario, if funds meant for healthcare or education at the grassroots is siphoned by the electorate, by the, politically exposed persons, what happens? Yeah. The marginalized and the vulnerable who do not have alternatives, they suffer. So local journalism is important.
Absolutely. And Dara, over to you.
Thank you so much. I'll take a slightly similar but slightly divergent view. Local journalism, I believe, is the closest source of information to us as audiences, right? And so in that framework, local journalism is beyond the ambit of just grassroots journalism. It is, like I said, the closest, what's the first information source that communicates to you, but also communicates your voice, every cadre of the audience level. So at grassroots level, your first journalism port should be your local journalism. At urban level, the media that speaks to you most directly is what I see as local journalism, and that's why it's most important. So it should understand you as an audience the most directly. You know, more regional or more national journalism, are great for macro issues, but for the micro personal issues, that is those are the organizations, those are the people who are putting personality and humanity to everyday issues.
And of course, we're all here because we're all grantees, or your organizations were grantees of the MacArthur Foundation's On Nigeria program. Okay, so let's stay with you, Dara, for the next question. What role do you, in your experience, does philanthropy and media support play in strengthening local journalism?
I would always see media as, businesses. So the role that philanthropy plays or can play and has played and has continued to play is institutional support. And you did mention one key case study, one key example that we have all experienced. We've all experienced, right? The On Nigeria, the MacArthur On Nigeria program. And one of the differentiating factors in that program is how it has institutionalized not just local journalism, but different kinds of journalism across the country, across the continent, accountability journalism, investigative journalism. Well, all of this, but from the local perspective. So you have local journalists who are investigative journalists, who are solutions journalists, who are advocacy journalists. And these are not just spring up organizations that have been charged to write a few stories on a couple of, aspects, but institutionalized philanthropy is able to, strengthen the system the systems that produce these outputs that are valuable for societies to live, to thrive, and to make informed decisions about their lives.
Absolutely. And Adaobi, I'm going to come to you next because I want to hear from you an example, right, of how this kind of support that Dara has spoken about translates to real change on the ground.
Okay, let me start by thanking the MacArthur Foundation on behalf of Primorg and other grantees for the support through the On Nigeria project. We know that new investigative journalism is the core of newsroom. Mm-hmm. And if you take a poll now, you'll find out that majority of the media houses who have investigative journalism decks are grantees of MacArthur Foundation. Before the grant came, we know that the old guards, the old journalists, some of them ventured into it. But with time, who would replace them? Mm. Is there fund? And investigative journalism is risky, it's expensive, it's time consuming. So under the On Nigeria project, we have the media and journalism cohort. And the main goal of the MAJ cohort is to produce high investigative journalism report and also data-driven report, and also to disseminate this report via social media and other platforms, and also to the underserved communities. So on the On Nigeria project, journalists have benefited. It could be through training. It could be through procurement of gadgets, and also training on how to avoid slap suits. That's the strategic lawsuit against popular participation. And we also have situations where governments, because on that project, we've had so many investigative reports. And for us at Primorg, we amplified the investigative reports produced or reported by these media houses. We've had situations where government agencies reacted to some of these reports. We saw situations where government staff were sanctioned. We also have situations of policy changes as a result of investigative reports done by these journalists who have been trained under the MacArthur On Nigeria project. And also, whistleblowers, and by default, journalists are whistleblowers. Currently, there's this advocacy on whistleblower protection. We do not have the whistleblower law. We only have a policy. And the campaign is still ongoing under the All Nigeria Project. So I would say that there's huge progress, huge positive change, and also behavioral change.
I think that's really important. Fatima, I want to come to you because you work in a conflict area region where things like basic access, safety, and resources can be quite unpredictable, you would say. So from your experience, what does investment in local journalism look like in a place like that?
In conflict-affected regions like Yobe, women journalists have continued to work with courage despite many barriers. Yet we remain key in strengthening accountability, promoting gender-balanced storytelling, and shaping the narratives that reflect the realities of all citizens. So to us, women journalists in Yobe State, journalism is not just a profession. It is a daily act of courage and resilience because we are always faced with combination of conflict-related, cultural, gender, and institutional challenges. And these challenges, these problems, do not only limit women's participation in the media landscape, it has also silenced critical perspectives that are essential for inclusive journalism. So in conflict-affected society like Yobe State, we can see investment is not just about, it's much more about funding. It's much more than funding. It's this about survival and access. Yes, it is about providing a media-friendly environment where women journalists can freely carry out their work with safety and ethically responsible. Yes. It is about safety because we have to be alive to report stories. When fear dominates the space, journalists need tools that will help them verify facts. And to us, also women journalists in Yobe State, we see investment as breaking the barriers that silence us. Yes, because investment must address cultural barrier, it must address harassment, it must address limited access to heartbeats. Here I mean we need mentorship, we need training, we need conflict-related training that will help us navigate all these challenges that are ahead of us. And we can also see, and we also need community engagement and awareness creation so that women's participation in the media landscape can be understood by the community leaders and the people in the community so that it can be normalized for women to freely practice their profession without any stigma or discrimination. And we can also see that investment is also strengthening local media organizations for them to have the independence to report accuracy and with dignity.
Absolutely. And you spoke there about some of the resources and tools that you need to do that. So I'm going to ask everybody about skills, capacity, resources, those kind of things. So name one critical skill or resource that local journalists need today. So let's start with Fatima and we'll work our way around.
Yes, because in our own case, because we are just recovering from insurgency, there is this distrust between the community people and the journalists around. So if there is one thing we need investment to focus on is the building of trust between the community and the media so that they can accept them. Because sometimes you will be going and coming back, going and coming back for them to grant you an interview one. Is a case for them. So we need that because many people are recovering from trauma. They are recovering. We are mostly dealing with survivors of conflict. So we need to have that trust if it means allowances, on the field allowances, and all these things. We need to have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about you, Adelby?
Okay, so for me, it would be that first, for journalists, they need to know how to balance their story. If there's a case you're investigating, you have a lead, it's good to hear from both sides. Because if you hear from one side and you go ahead to publish your report, you're not being fair to the other party. Another would be evidence, security of your evidence. After you have gone ahead to publish your report, how do you secure your evidence? You could get a gadget and store it there, or you could store it virtually in the cloud, because some of these politically exposed persons or political elites, they would wait for you.
Explain what you mean by that. They will wait for you.
They will wait for the journalist.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you do not have your evidence to back up what you have published, lawsuit follows. Mm. And for some of them, they are so strategic and wicked, if you would permit me to use that. Because let's say you're in Abuja, in Nigeria, and you published your report. A politically exposed person who wants to deal with you would file a lawsuit in Sokoto.
Wow.
What that means is you have to go to
travel,
Sokoto.
Yeah.
And you know, because they have the funds, they can hire senior lawyers. You, as a journalist, do you have the funds to hire senior lawyers? Or would the media organization represent you or hire a senior lawyer to defend you? So security of your evidence is key. It's not just reporting, but you need to secure your evidence.
Absolutely, and it's a very important point you make there in terms of the resources available for you, whether it's your freelance journalist is different from having an organization that's backing you.
Exactly.
And even the capability of those organizations, because that is one of the key issues with media, is sustainability. Right. So, and finally, Dara, you name one critical skill or resource that local journalists need today.
Thanks. I like what you said about that they will wait for you.
Yes.
I mean, my comment is, you know, based on the pretext that the challenges that media organizations face, especially at the local level, they are intense, they are real, and sometimes almost insurmountable. But the point of building resilient media organizations is to say that how do we, despite all of the risks that exist, how do we continue to survive and not just survive but thrive? And so the skills that I would say, amidst all of the real and critical and terrible challenges that have been described, not demeaning them but just acknowledging them, is to say that one skill is, well, two: effective community engagement strategies. It's interesting because in no area is community engagement the most effective community engagement the most pronounced than at local journalism level. Because you have almost direct access to your audience. And those are the audiences that want to speak to you and have the time to speak to you. Take, for example, your community radio. They come to your radio station and like, yeah, I want to put in this ad, or I want to support you with yams or chicken. I've heard those stories. It's beautiful.
Wow. Yeah,
they will organize events themselves and say the radio host should come and then talk about. It's amazing, you know. So effective community engagement strategies at the local level is something that I will say that local journalists need to strengthen. Also product thinking. It sounds like a complex, high-level thing for only a New York Times, but no, product thinking for local journalists is also just as critical, because when you are strengthening your community engagement strategies, you need to think about value creation. I love that.
Yeah.
Value creation and value capture. So the way to capture value from community engagement is through an effective product thinking approach. I'll put out a resource about, you know, product thinking for local newsrooms that I believe would be helpful. So yeah, those are the two things I'd say.
Yeah, and I think part of what you were saying about community engagement that also builds to what Fatima was saying around trust, right? Your audience and your community have to trust you, to talk to you and to engage with you at that level. And it's great to hear about the chickens and the yams as well.
Hello, Hermida Diary listeners. Permit me to introduce to you the Kigali Declaration on the Elimination of Gender Violence in and Through Media in Africa. It's a groundbreaking commitment to address the forms of gender violence experienced by women in media and how media reports on gender-based violence. So whether you sign up as an individual or as an organization, it is a sign that you are pledging to consciously play your role in tackling this important issue and working towards creating safer and more inclusive work environments for everyone. Imagine a media landscape that treats every story with balance and every voice with dignity. By adopting the Kigali Declaration, it's not just a commitment, it's a powerful step towards social change. And that change starts with us. So if you are ready to take that bold step and make that social change, visit our website at africanwomeninmedia.com/declaration to read the declaration, to commit to it, and to begin to take action.
So, Adaobi, I'm coming back to you. Which tools or trainer have had the biggest impact for community reporters, would you say?
I would go take a cue from what she said. Community engagement. And I will give an example of what we did at PrimeOrg. There was an investigative report published by, I think, the Cable on how electricity scheme became a scam. Mm. And we amplified that report. Someone from a particular community, Peggy community, in Kuje Area Council in Abuja, reached out to us. We invited him to come on the program. And I like the fact that the community was so organized. We decided to host a radio town hall meet, sorry, a community town hall engagement there. And we brought the electricity actors. We took them to that community. And good enough, there was positive change. Because if you're in Nigeria, we know what happens in the electricity sector, especially those on estimated billing. And the fact that community members, citizens, need to get prepaid meter. And it's a huge corruption circle there. Yeah. So we're able to solve that electricity challenge for that particular community. So working in tandem, in sync with community members, gives positive change and results.
And so, I mean, you can pretty much see the impacts in itself straight away like that, because it's not always easy to measure the outcome or the impact of kind of this kind of work.
It's got good impact.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Dara, how do you measure whether media development support actually works?
One answer, does it last beyond your support? And that goes back to my earlier point about institutionalized support. So earlier frameworks for media development support used to be around, you know, increasing outputs, increasing media outputs. Mm-hmm. I used to call it, you know, using the media, and not in a good way. But when media support or philanthropic support moves from using the media or seeing the media as just a tool, but seeing them, I'm moving to seeing them as a partner, you now begin to talk about your institutionalized support. And then one of the ways to measure impact is after, say, the 8 to 10 years of, for example, the MacArthur on Nigeria program. You mentioned that a number of media organizations now have investigative desks. How many of those desks still remain 5 months later? How many of them still remain 1 year later? It's been, it's over a year since the program stopped. Yeah. How many of them still remain now? And how do we still continue to collect and document the impact of this program? So continuity, sustainability is the most relevant way I'll say we measure impact.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something that we also talk about when it comes to gender advocacy also, like when you remove the funding, how many of those gender policies continue to be implemented and doesn't just collect dust on the shelf? So it's a very valid point, and I think it's for the philanthropy platform organizations to learn from that, from the impact that it had or didn't, based on those, like you said, 5 years on, is it still there? And that's the real measure. Fatima, as a grantee of the MacArthur Foundation's Om Nigeria program, what specific investment or support made the biggest difference to how NAWOJ in Yobe carries out its journalism and advocacy work on the ground?
At this point, I would like to sincerely appreciate MacArthur Foundation for providing a supporting space for women journalists to connect, come together and share their experiences and amplify their voices, because without their support, I wouldn't have been here. They're the ones that sponsored me to this conference to Addis Ababa, and this is my first time. So I would like to appreciate them and look forward for more engagement with them. And even though MacArthur Foundation support on Yobe State NAWOJ comes through partnership, training opportunities, and participation in wider media strengthening initiatives like this, rather than a direct grant. We have not accessed their grant directly, but we have benefited from those that have accessed that through trainings and workshops. And they have carried a lot of trainings on investigative journalism, data skills, fact-checking and verification, and anti-corruption and accountability trainings. And I could remember one of my predecessors, the former chairperson, once attended their workshop, I think organized by International Center for Investigative Journalism. And when she came back, she did a step-down training for us in the state. And I must tell you that training has impacted a lot on women journalists in Yobe State, because it has improved their confidence and their competence. And that has also translated in their credibility in the newsroom, because they can now report on issues affecting women, children, and the less privileged that would attract government attention, humanitarian attention. For example, there was a report carried out by many NAWOJans because of the volume of the reports. So it attracted many attention, because the reports you actually focus on the negligence of maternal and health care at the rural areas, how pregnant women in the rural areas suffer in accessing antenatal care. And because of that report, and because of advocacies from NAWOJ, yes, the government has swung into action. And as I'm talking to you now, we have 178 wards across 70 local government areas, and the governor has made sure that every ward has a primary health care facility there, and they have recruited many health personnel, and they make sure it is functioning well. So in essence, MacArthur Foundation has changed the perspective and the attitudes of women journalists in Yobe State. They are now bold enough to address issues. They are not bold enough to hold government accountable to what they are doing, and they carry out fact-based reporting in Yobe State. So it has impacted a lot.
So we're going to change the tempo a bit, because we've been quite positive about the outcomes, and you know, it's that's not a bad thing, right? Because there's been impact, there's been support, etc. But I imagine there will be still some challenges in spite of that. So you're nodding at Adaobi. So let's start with you. So what barriers do journalists still face, even with the support?
Again, I will take a cue from what she said earlier, talking about sustainability for media organizations. For media houses that have investigative decks, now that the fund from the MacArthur Foundation has ceased, what happens? Is there a revenue model that media houses can adopt to ensure that they continue with their on the job. And for media houses that have investigative desks, would they go for adverts from government or commercials?
And risk their independence.
Exactly. So the answer would probably be no for some. And for media houses that decide to go for adverts and commercials, would the commercials from government go around all the media houses? So how are they going to survive, given that the fund has depleted? I think that's where your organization comes in.
My next question is slightly different, but actually I imagine that you could respond to that about media sustainability, because that's pretty much your area of work at MDIF, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the kind of models that perhaps you're seeing emerging that would be that lifeline that they would need now?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. And thank you for that, Doc. Two doctors.
Yes. We're representing.
Okay. So I would say that, similar to what we said in the workshop earlier, there is multiple full sources of revenue for media organizations. Oftentimes, we focus on the one, which is what you've mentioned, which is advertising. And again, I'd like to reiterate that advertising is just one of the is inside one of the four broad categories of ways that we like to say media organizations can earn revenue. Advertising is basically selling your audience, which is selling your eyeballs. There's others. They're selling to your audience. And when I mean selling to your audience, that means engaging, leveraging on things like reader revenue or audience revenue and so on and so forth. That, I believe, is an untapped resource that media organizations need to lean into. I was saying during the week that it is easier to stop with one policy to stop advertisements from GT Bank, Ministry of Works, basically advertisements from major sources, than it is to stop 1 million people who are paying you 1 naira every month.
Yeah.
And that's significant revenue. Mm. It's much harder to stop all of them. Mm. There's power in, you know, that volume of people supporting you consistently.
But do people want to pay for content, though?
Have we asked them?
Should I? I mean, I imagine there's some examples we could look at, maybe perhaps in the creative and culture, in creative industries, like Roku TV, for example, right? You know, those kind of platforms.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Even coming to media, we like to use the example of Daily Maverick. Mm. Daily Maverick is an investigative, it's not entertainment, because oftentimes when we talk about these things, we will say, oh, but it's entertainment, it's soft news. No. Daily Maverick is an investigative media organization, and they have unlocked reader revenue that is about 70% of their revenue, I think, as a last count. Now, one of the things that I like to, you know, that I've seen them do pretty well is that they are shameless about asking their audiences. But sometimes very proud. It's good to be proud. It's a very noble profession, media. But I mean, at some point, we need to let the audience know that without their support,
this is what we need.
This thing that we're giving to them will die. Mm. And nobody wants stuff that's valuable to them to die.
Mm. It would be interesting to see if there can be a Daily Maverick model in Nigeria. The contexts are different, aren't they? And doesn't mean they wouldn't pay, but perhaps the model is... Because I think Daily Maverick is donation, like you give what you can kind of thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's a donation membership model that is based on consistent psychological tactics and begging. Shameless. I mean, we can't be too proud to, ask for our audience support. It's basically a sales speech to your most important client, which is your audience.
Yeah. And I'll bring you in. I think it still goes back to what you were saying earlier about trust, community engagement, and then also just the quality of what you're producing.
Yes.
And that's what people are paying for, really, isn't it? Please go ahead.
Okay, I just want to quickly add that we need to let citizens understand that accountability is participatory. Because oftentimes I present radio programs on air, on radio, and oftentimes citizens who call in will tell you, you are a journalist, go and investigate this, go and investigate that. What of you as a citizen? What are you doing? So accountability is participatory. And like she said, media houses should not be ashamed to let the city, should I say begging? Ask for citizens to contribute.
Yeah.
But you also need to let the citizen know the value that you are adding.
Absolutely.
So for them to commit their resources into whatever you're doing. Yeah. Then another challenge that media houses face, despite the funding from MacArthur Foundation and other international donors, would be government restriction. As a journalist, you are trying to... We know that politicians, they love power, they love influence, and they also use money. Not all of them, but some of them gotten through corrupt acts. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to cut that channel, they will come after you. It could be through regulation. In Nigeria, we have the National Broadcasting Commission, NBC, that keeps coming up with different codes just to regulate what the media houses push out there. Mm-hmm. And also we have the Cybercrime Act of 2024 amended. That's another avenue that the government tries to stifle the media. But one way out would be for media houses to collaborate. Don't work in silo. If you have done an investigation, you could share with other media houses so that you will publish,
co-publish
together. And who will they come after? Who will they go after? Will they go after six or seven media houses at the same time?
Absolutely. And I guess part of the challenges with the NBC code and other regulatory systems is the vagueness of some of these codes as well that can pretty much be interpreted whichever way you want it to be. Dara, I want to come back to you about funders and what gaps remain in that ecosystem that funders often overlook.
Context-specific support, and I like what some of what Fatima had mentioned. People really understanding, you know, the space that journalists are working in. I do see efforts in that regard, but it needs to be strengthened. Mm. We still see some significant helicopter philanthropy happening. What that means is, you know, another term is God complex or savior complex. Let's dive in. We see a problem, this community. An example is we see a community that does not have water. Let's dig a borehole for them. However, no research was done to say...
What is the root cause?
Exactly. How are they solving the problem currently? It might be not the most efficient way.
Or your way.
Exactly. Who's to say what is efficient or not?
Yeah.
Now, it's now to collectively co-create what is the best way to move or amplify or better that solution, however, you know, temporary it has been. Yeah. Avoiding the helicopter approach, helicopter philanthropy, understanding the context, you know, just looking at the fact that, acknowledging the fact that local journalists are intelligent, capable, and have incredible insights to provide here.
Absolutely. Fatima, I'm coming back to you. I want to ask you if you can share with us one moment where you've witnessed local reporting directly improving the lives of women, children, and the vulnerable in your community.
Local journalists have shed lights on issues affecting women, children, and the less privileged in the society. For example, in the area of girl-child education, the problems in girl-child education, the insecurity, the long distance, the early marriage happening in Yobe State. For example, when the case of abduction of the T girls, secondary school girls, happened, so we noticed that there is dropouts in schools. We noticed there are high rates of early marriage, and parents are not willing to send their children to school again. They usually marry them off after JSS class. You know, JSS class mostly is day secondary school. They are not boarding. They are not boarding. So after day, they get feared of sending their children to boarding school because they are thinking that they will come and kidnap them again or something because of the insecurity and because of the long distance. So we noticed that, and we, at NAWAJ level, we call for a congress and we employ our members to carry out reports on to know the causes and the possible solutions to that problem. So we carried out reports and the parents were able to tell us the problems, why they are not sending their children to school. So we add that report with advocacy to relevant stakeholders in the education sector in the state. And that report yielded positive results because government now established more senior secondary schools, day secondary schools, within the reach of the community. So parents are no more fearing that their children will... because of the proximity of the schools to the community, they are now allowing them to go to school so that they will complete their secondary school education at least. And because of the... not fear, there is no fear of insecurity. They are going and coming back. So I think that report yielded positive result.
Absolutely. And I kind of see some synergies in what we've been talking about around helicopter kind of complex, around community insights and advocacy, right? And around investigative journalism and opportunities for there to be that collaborative ecosystem, right? And this is a question for all of you. How do civil society, journalists, donor collaborate better without harming editorial independence also? Who wants to take that? I'll give you guys the choice.
Not because we benefited from the MacArthur Foundation, but I must also give MacArthur Foundation and its staff their flowers. For the media houses that are into investigative journalism, I have not heard, and MacArthur has not for one day called us to say, this report, a politically exposed person is indicted, don't amplify, or don't publish. They allowed their grantees to go ahead and do their job. And within the On Nigeria program, we have the cohort, media and journalism, and other cohorts, CSOs. MacArthur allowed us to, or encouraged the cohorts to collaborate, media houses collaborating with CSOs. And MacArthur provided trainings, international exposure to their grantees. We're able to work together and resource situations where different media houses co-published reports. And for us at Primorg, we amplified investigative reports. And we also shared, we saw other media houses and other CSO amplify the reports that we amplified. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. So there's this collaboration within the grantees. Because when you collaborate, you get more impact instead of walking in silos.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dara, I wonder whether you can respond to the question slightly differently because you also have the MDIF hat on because you are also an investment fund for media organizations.
We have seen two examples, and I will build on that to say that one of the key ways, you know, going back to your question, one of the key ways to continue to build impact while, you know, not interfering editorially is two things: to be clear on an onboarding process. That's from the side of, you know, the investors or the donors. Be clear on your onboarding process. And on the side of, you know, grantees, what is always looked out for is a strong media product. And I insist on saying a strong media product rather than, you know, strong content, because that's what it is. It's a media product. So a strong quality media product. because that's what, you know, we look at. And once that is in place, our job is to remove focus from the editorial, like my colleague will say, is to have a wall around editorial. That means that your eye is not in the editorial. Once you've just ascertained that this organization has a strong public-facing, public media, public interest rather, media products, you then support the other core areas that will help the organizations continue to do good journalism.
Absolutely. So, Adaobi, how do you choose between radio and social media for accountability campaigns?
Okay, for us at Primorg, we deploy both conventional media outfits or outlets and also social media. And we will explain. We deploy the radio to amplify our investigative reports, published investigative reports by other media houses. We also edit and upload the content on social media. They are regular radio listeners. And you know what radio does? If you miss a 9 a.m. radio program, you have missed it. There is no opportunity for you to go back, except if the radio station decides to replay. So we disseminate that content on radio, and we also syndicate to other radio stations. For every episode, we issue press statements that we disseminate to other media houses to also amplify. And we take those contents again to social media. For those who may not have the opportunity of sitting down to read for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, we produce snippets of that content that we share on radio, on other social media platforms, so that nobody is left out. If it's radio, the content is there. If it's YouTube, the content is there. Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever other social media platform, the content is there.
Absolutely. So I want to wrap us up as we look to the future. Okay. So perhaps we'll stick with you first, Adaobi. Okay. Continue on that thread. What advice would you give to young journalists who wants to drive accountability?
Like I said earlier, accountability is participatory. It's time-consuming for those who want to delve into investigative journalism. It is risky. But the reward outweighs the difficulties. And you should also see yourself as that person that citizens rely on. You're that hope of the hopeless. You're the voice of the voiceless. And imagine a situation where there are no media outlets. It will just be darkness. Corruption will thrive. Because some people believe, oh, you're just there talking. You're shouting. Every time you're on air, you publish a report. What has happened? What if you did not publish the report? So, for you out there, journalism is not a piece of cake. But the gains at the end outweighs the difficulties. So you're welcome on board.
Very well said. And Fatima, thinking about Northern Nigeria, what is the one area that donors consistently underestimate when it comes to funding local media in the region and that you would like to see improved in the future?
Many donors usually focus on the short-term training of journalists, but they rarely concentrate on the long-term. For example, the trust I was talking about, they need to invest in that. They need to do a lot of things about that, especially in our region. And they need to also, in our area, I'm talking about our region, they need to focus on mentorship, and they need to focus also on professional development to women journalists so that they will compete favorably with their counterparts across the world.
Okay, absolutely. And finally, to you, Dara, where do you see big opportunities for journalists' impact in the next 3 to 5 years? Big question.
Yeah, but then I think repeated answer, which is communities. I see, I think journalism might change or some aspect of it might expand. It would move from a one-way street that it has been to a more collaborative type of engagement that Dr. Adaobi had, you know, advocated for. So two-way journalism, more engaged audiences, more vocal audiences. And the thing with vocal audiences is that we have to be prepared for it. When the audience is vocal, it's not always good. They will call you out. So you have to battle potential adversaries. So it then means that media and journalists need to be very clear on their ethos, on their why, and on, you know, where they want to go, what they want to achieve. So that those are some of the areas I see that, you know, journalism opportunities exist for media organizations.
Next 3 years. All right, final question for all of you, quick fire one, okay? So one thing that gives you hope for the future of local journalism in Africa is?
Local journalism has started changing their perspective and their attitudes towards their work. So I think we are getting there.
Okay. Adaobi?
Training, capacity building. Mm. And we have seen more journalists who are resilient. Yeah.
Okay. Ndara?
What gives me hope for the future? Weird, but misinformation and the rise of AI.
It gives you hope, okay?
Yeah. Why?
You have to elaborate on that.
People don't see it, but it's an opportunity. The proliferation of misinformation through most likely AI sources and so on and so forth points to the need that humans have for human and authentic content. Mm, yeah. So the more misinformation there is, the more AI-generated content there is. At some point, the bubble will burst, and it's bursting already.
Yeah.
Teenagers are going from using themselves, not their parents saying, they are going from using smartphones to choosing dumb phones, like our Nokia 3310. So people are choosing the human content end to end. So the more misinformation, I have hope that as it's bubbling, it's going to burst and, you know, people, you know, will move to more human-centered content. Yeah.
Looking forward to that. All right. What a powerful conversation. Thank you so much, ladies, for having this very important conversation with me. A huge thank you to Fatima Mohammed Ahmed, Dr. Adaobi Obiabumo.
Thank you.
I did it perfect.
Me.
Yeah. And Oluwadara Ajala, for sharing such important and thoughtful insights from your experiences and practical knowledge in your areas of work. And thank you to our live audience here in Addis Ababa at the African Women in Media 2025 conference. Your energy and presence made the dialogue even more meaningful. If there is one thing this discussion has reminded us of, is that investing in local journalism is not charity. It is nation building. So if you found today's conversation inspiring, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, to the podcast, to our social media handles, and leave a review and share it with anybody you think needs to hear this. If you'd like to join me on an episode of this podcast, email me at yemisi@africanwomeninmedia.com. And don't forget, join the conversation using the hashtag #HerMediaDiary. Thank you, and see you again soon.